the great cricketer is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level.
Boys!
Get a few today, did you?
To be honest with you, I hate grade cricket.
I went into to play for a team called the name escaped me.
Obviously, showering's always a big issue. A big issue for young kids coming into a senior cricket team.
I was like a witness league.
A bit of advice. Sort of one.
I refer to the great cricketer here, and I'll say this will do a little bit early.
Hello and welcome back to the Grade Cricketer Podcast. On today's show, summer is back and COVID is sort of gone in some states, so we inject the vaccine into our veins that is cricket in December, Steve Smith runs and Indian scaredy bats. We're talking selection conundrums, barefoot circles, letters to Bradman and the new Big Bash rules. Steve Smith is on the show to confirm his one of his blobs, Sutherland, in the, if that is true, captaincy questions, Marnus getting Test Player of the Year, and if Tim Brisbane costs England his citizenship by giving him gloves instead of a county gig. Ed Cowan is on the show to kick off the summer for the fifth season running to discuss what Vrat's like as a bloke, power surges and X factors, and scoring runs against South Australia. Hashtag RTDC involves promotions, bucks parties, and shitting yourself during an appeal. This episode is brought to you by Budgie Smuggler, where you can get all of your Christmas gifts, your smugglers, and your accessories using the code CHAMP at checkout for free shipping. That's at budgiesmuggler.com. You can also check out our Patreon at patreon.com/greatcricketer for more exclusive content every single week. More of that a little bit later. You can also find the show right now on YouTube, as well as in full interviews, cut downs of the show. If you want to like, comment, and subscribe, then please do, because it helps us out a lot. My name is Ian Higgins, and I'm joined by Sam Perry, Pezzy Lad. Sam Perry, Pez Dispenser, welcome to the summer of 2020.
Thank you very much, mate. And I'm very pleased for you as a recent, resident of Melbourne, mm-hmm. that you're now out of lockdown, experiencing the, you know, sights and sounds, lights and frivolity of Chapel Street and beyond.
It's, oh, Jesus. Well, Siri's listening, so that's always a good start.
Siri just said, I didn't get that.
Didn't
hit,
even get it.
Hit a boundary.
Mate, I appreciate that. And maybe we should speak about that because our friends in the UK, who are no doubt tuning in, after our little three-week sojourn. We're doing it tough, although they're coming out of lockdown next week, so, you know, crowds will be back soon. Pez, I want to start the show by we had a message, a little tip-off this week of a message, and it was just...
We'll get a few tip-offs.
We get a couple of tip-offs.
Some good.
A couple of tip-offs, and it involves match-fixing in the IPL, actually. No, it doesn't. It involves grade cricket, which is a Twitter stream. It's about playing cricket at the grade level, as you know. But let me read the message that came in. It said, popped in to see the end of the Manly grade game on the weekend. Bunch of grommets are walking up the hill next to the ground carrying Alco Pop drinks and goon bags. One of them is being pushed in a trolley and asks his mates to stop briefly. He looks across the oval to see the scoreboard. Instantly yells out, Randwick Petersham, eh? More Peter shit. Whole ground hears it, taps on the trolley, and his mates push him on. Now, it's great to see that whilst maybe society, there's been some evolution, not in any sort of biological sense, Sam, but maybe in societal sense, and we'll be speaking about those things later on. But, you know, good to see that grade cricket is still very much in the 18th century.
And if you are joining this podcast for the first time, welcome. You know, that is the overlay of our approach to cricket. He goes, Mr. Speaker, because grade cricket is a great leveller, you know, and so it shall remain, you know. Last time we spoke, Trump was president. He's not president anymore. But grade cricket is always going to bring every person back to earth. Now, let's just have a look at this scene. Let's just paint this picture. This game would have been played at the gorgeous Manly Oval, no doubt
one
bathed
of my favorites.
In sunlight. Two beachside teams brimming with current or ex-first-class talent, playing a tough arm-wrestling game of first-grade cricket. And, like... You know, Manly, this is the club of Michael Bevan, you know, of Keith Miller, currently Mickey and Jack Edwards for New South Wales, Chris Green, Stephen O'Keefe, right? For Randwick Petersham, the club of Cheekwee, Warner, Cadditch, Horitz, Kawaja, Mike Whitney, you know, currently Jason Sanger, Daniel Sams. Great cricketers like to hang on to this prestige.
Yeah.
Right? Beautiful. I've set the scene well, haven't I, right? Uh-huh. I mean, great, we're going to talk about great cricketers.
Sydney
Test cricket's just sold us media rights.
Yeah.
Every so often you get reminded that prestige is a lie.
Quite often
that reminder can be jarring, as it was in this case. You know, more like Peter Shit, this guy says with his Alco Pop. sitting in a trolley.
Just walking past the
taps
ground.
Taps the trolley, moves on. You know, 3 years ago, Steve O'Keefe cleaned up Virat Kohli at Pune to take 12 for 70. Cleaned him up.
Yeah.
Now some bloke's drinking a goon bag, ordering his mates to stop pushing the trolley so he can say Randwick Peter shit.
Yeah. It's better than how's that?
Yeah, good point.
I'll give him that.
Good point.
I'll give him that.
Taps the trolley.
Pez, before we get into the show, so much to talk about.
Yeah. Yeah.
But a couple of bits of pieces, little bits and pieces. Fuck, I've forgotten how to talk in the last 3 weeks. Sam, you would have seen on social media that we have released a T-shirt, Great Cricketer T-shirt.
Oh, I did see that.
Champ or be champed is the branding across it. Now, this is an exclusive offer and it finishes on Friday. Last orders are taken before Friday. So you can find the link to that on our Facebook page and it's also our Instagram bio currently as well. It's a wonderful piece of merchandise. Champ or be champed. You can wear that in all venues, occasions.
Probably not cargo upstairs.
No, it's actually quite limited where you can wear it now. Yeah. I think about it, You wouldn't wear that to a garden party.
You know, kindly offer the opportunity to produce some merchandise, a limited edition exclusive. And we thought, where do we want to take this? And we thought, well, what is the overall philosophy of cricket that we would like to offer the dear listener?
And life.
Exactly. And we just felt like the one that overlays to all of it is really the approach to life. It's quite a sick approach, really.
Yes. It's wildly unhealthy.
I mean, if you actually subscribe to this unironically, that's problematic. Mm. Buy the shirt still, please. But champ or be champed, you know? Because if you aren't champing someone, someone will champ you. They'll get you.
Dog eat dog.
Dog eat dog. Go to Instagram if you want to sort of represent that philosophy.
Pez, the Patreon push has been pushing on right during our little break that we've had. And what can they find there at the moment, Sam?
Well, Patreon continues. You know, if you want to soak in the TGC way of life.
If you want.
Some people like this show, and great, you know.
Some people
If you just want Steve Smith and Ed Cowan, sorry, that's great. Mm. Go for it. If you want to soak in the TGC way of life a little bit, you know, we've got our weekly Ask TGC Fridays cast. People writing in with their own you know, bugs bearing on their own cricketing life, and we pass them.
A lot of agony.
That's the main thing. Yep. You know, the looser, darker life questions, and they're answered with the requisite looseness and darkness. We've got some long form writing on there when we can get around to it. We've got some dream analysis from our resident psychological scientist. That's no joke. We have a psychological scientist who answers cricket dreams. A couple of other casts overseas and stuff have started doing cricket dreams and stuff like that.
That's interesting. Yeah.
Anyway, we don't own cricket dreams.
Speak for yourself.
We're just vessels. You know, if you're after a little bit of analysis with your side mouth stuff, a bit of a side mouth analysis, well, last week you put up a panel, you know, with Trent Woodhill and Dan Christian, two great exponents of T20 cricket, talking about the new BBL rule changes.
That's right.
We're going to chat with Ben Lachlan coming up this Thursday as well. That's going to be on Patreon as well. We'll bring it out from behind Patreon in a couple of weeks' time. But so there's a good amount of action happening there. If you do sign up in the next couple of days, you're going to get 20% off that merch that we just spoke about as well if you're a Patreon subscriber. So hopefully plenty of value there, $5 or $10 a month if you want to be part of it, your choice. If you can't manage it, no dramas at all.
Don't worry about
enjoy
it.
Enjoy Steve Smith. Enjoy Ed Cowan.
To that point, Pez, it's patreon.com/greatcricketer is the place you can do that. $5 a month, $10 a month, whatever you like. Now, it's a huge summer. It's a huge summer for us. We're excited for it. You know,
we're going big.
It's actually a huge 12 months. Now, yesterday, it was actually it was 1 year before the Ashes starts. And we've also got the Indian summer coming up here in Australia. Then India go to England over there. Then it's the Ashes.
Lots of cricket.
So much cricket, man. So it's exciting. So get around us there. Now, it's a big summer for us in terms of getting around guests. It's a huge explosion. Steve Smith, one of the White Whales.
We've landed a white whale.
Some more white whales in the works.
Always.
And one of them, it's not so much a white whale, but a great chap. Now, this sort of happened by accident, but we spoke to Greg Chappell a couple of weeks ago. Was that last week? We spoke to him recently.
Yeah.
And the chat was supposed to go for 15 minutes, went for 53 minutes.
Yep.
53-minute chat. Now, what we've decided to do there, Pez, is we're going to release that as a separate podcast this week. It's going to come out on Thursday. It's a 53-minute chat. We get into fucking all sorts. We get into a 1973 West Indies tour. We're talking about the grey cricket stuff. We're talking about Cameron Green and his tour runs. We're talking about him shitting his pants when he was 14.
Save it for the listener.
Yeah, sure.
That's the sort of gold that we're talking about.
Okay.
But you're right. Greg Chappell's got a lot to say. He's been out in the media, and we just texted and just said, "Listen, would you like a chat?" He's kind of like an ex-PM at the moment. He's just ready to open his mouth. There's a bit of legacy defending going on. First half of the chat is very much about his upbringing, bit of his experiences. Then it sort of gets a bit fiery. At one point, talking about youth policies and the benefits of you know Indian youth cricket, he describes me as handicapped. And he says my son's going to struggle because of his genes. We'd met that morning.
He's confident.
He's confident, yeah. He just got...
Cause he pulls no punches, Bez. Yeah.
I mean, Greg Chappell's getting into some senior years here, but you still get that opportunity when you listen to him chat of like, you were an Australian captain during a pretty rough era. So, yeah, that comes out on Thursday on the main feed for everybody, epic 53-minute chat just to kick off the summer.
Okay, the point being is there's a huge summer. We've got so much coming out. So we're really looking forward to it. A couple of weeks off, recharge of batteries, huge summer, and it's all before us, Pez. It's all before us. The first T20 starts on Friday. Yeah. This is Tuesday today. Let's talk about what the story of the summer is. Like, what is this summer about? Well, we sort of asked this question last year when it's fucking...
It's always a theme.
It's the end of the Ashes. It was sort of feel like the end of a cycle in some capacities. You know, we retained the Ashes, didn't win them. And then it was New Zealand, then it was Pakistan, then it was Warner getting 335, and it was Colin de Grandhomme having the bowling. And it was all a bit like... What is this? We didn't realise how good we had it pre-pandemic, Sam.
Mm. Well, a few years ago... Pre-sandpaper, it was like collapse boys. They collapsed a lot.
The collapse boys.
And then they became bad boys the following year with sandpaper. Yes. Then they were redemption boys.
Redemption boys.
Last year was Manus.
Manus boys.
And Manus and his boys. This year, it was meant to be 1v2. You know, Smith v. Coley big boys.
Yeah.
And now it's like bubble boys.
Yeah.
Schedules, COVID normal, Pfizer vaccines. Trying to pick out a theme for the summer, I think it's about Justin Langer still intending to recreate the 90s. You know, first, and we're going to discuss this, he's banging on about it's harder to get out and get in the Australian side, which made sense in the 90s when every bloke averaged more than 45, except for Mark Waugh, but he got the right runs that looked good.
Yeah.
Okay, so it was worth more than 45.
The wristband was just so.
Exactly. Put it on, just hair coming out the back of his helmet, just so.
Just so.
And the second thing he's trying to do, he's now releasing a book for kids called The Art of Cricket, which is based on letters he exchanged between he and Bradman in the 90s, where he asked Bradman for technical advice. He's pushing this around a little bit, this letter that Bradman gave to him that's now being used as a marketing device for Langer's book. Okay. Yeah.
Ironic because...
And if you read the letter, Bradman, he asked Bradman for technical advice. He's played for Australia. He says, I just struggle against medium paces. And Bradman basically says, read my book called The Art of Cricket Championship. That's if you can't read the letter, you don't have the time. That's essentially what it says.
Yeah.
Anyway, and now Langer's making a book for kids out of it called The Art of Cricket. Yeah. Sunrise, Sunset.
Yeah, that's right. That whole exchange felt very much like Bradman was in prison and Justin was reaching out, or vice versa. I'm not really sure which one it was.
You just imagined a prison.
Yeah.
Yes, well, cricket is a prison.
Well, isn't it just?
And a prison.
So this summer, Pez, is, I know, I was excited, you know, about the idea that there was going to be some, you know, some prodigy boys.
Yeah, prodigy runs, prodigal runs.
I want prodigal runs. Yeah. I want prodigal boys. and I don't know if we're going to get it because the chat is at the moment if we can sort of get into some selection
stuff.
Yeah,
okay, let's do it. Yeah. Burns, Pekowski is the
thing. Yeah, that's the thing. And that's the thing. And it's like, you know, I've said this before, but Joe Burns doesn't get me off.
Yeah.
It doesn't do anything for me. It doesn't. No, it's like it's just fine. It's just,
bit of Joe Burns.
Exhale from the nose.
Yeah, bit of Pete Murray music.
It's fine. It's fine.
Yeah,
he's done a fine job.
You go to a festival, and I'll go into bat for Pete Murray in the early 2000s. Okay, yeah. You go to a festival 5 p.m. So sun's beautiful. Heading down in the afternoon. He's not going to challenge you with his music that much, but it'll do nice. It'll wash over you. It'll tide you over.
Oh yeah,
and Joe Burns does that. And full respect to him, 600s for Australia or so, average of 38, that's great.
Yeah.
But now we've got a throbber on the scene.
Yeah.
A real throbber.
Yeah, it's going to tie me over. Where's Powderfinger?
Exactly. Whatever, you know. Whatever flicks your switch in that regard. Pete Murray's 5 p.m. afternoon set, let's push through to the night. But now it's time for the headline set, and that's Bukowski.
It's got a couple of caps.
Now, it's not Joe's. Again, whatever flicks your switch. whatever flicks your switch. But like... But it turns out the great trump card that Burns has is that he somehow fulfills David Warner's chemistry needs. Well, he does.
Somehow
he does. And Justin Langer's on board with this. Now, look, I don't know about you, but there's actually, you know, Langer kind of goes on about being Zen. There's a bit of karate stuff or whatever.
Right.
There
was some earthing going on.
Martial arts. There's more than a hint of Chinese diplomacy about this, I see.
There's a strong whiff.
And I know you've been saying that off air. Joe Burns is going to get the good around the boy selection.
I know.
He's going to get it.
Mm.
because he's good around the boy, yeah. Warner.
This is all about a boy.
And it reminds me of Chinese diplomacy because in Chinese diplomacy, as you well know, yeah. And the listeners will
know,
it was based on a tribute system. You know, often associated with the Confucian world order, you know, in which neighbouring states comply and participate in the tribute system to secure guarantees of peace, investment, and trading opportunities, as you know.
It's all very Confucian.
One member acknowledged the other member's position as superior, in this case, Burns coming from a foreign country to Warner, the emperor, Warner's superior.
Yeah.
The superior would bestow investiture in the form of a crown, official, et cetera. Now, Warner's mentioned yesterday his 12 batting partners, and we're going to talk to Ed Cowan about this because he was one of them.
Yeah.
And he said, I never felt quite stable with them. Now, Burns has obviously turned up with Warner and he's offered the best tribute. What has Burns offered to Warner? Because he averages 38. The run scoring that they've done together is roughly the same as everyone else that he's done. It's fine. I'm just wondering what Burns is offering that we ain't seeing.
Well, because didn't Warner say that Joe Burns was a rare unit? He's the rare unit.
So he's the offset. He allows Warner to be the subtle alpha. Well, Warner's not allowed to be anything at the moment now.
He's not allowed to be anything.
Post sandpaper.
That's
the neutral.
He can captain IPL teams, but here, no, that's foreign water stuff. He can't get away with that kind of stuff here. Isn't it interesting that Warner went from the bull to the reverend, now he's the emperor? He's receiving tribute.
Well, it certainly seems that way. I mean, in all seriousness, I think Langer and Hones have erred greatly by even implicating Warner in selection decisions publicly. I mean, aren't there selectors for that? Isn't there a coach and a captain? And it's like, there's this really like tight call for whether the incumbent stays in or this new player comes in, and what they say is, and maybe they got it wrong accidentally, but it's like, oh, we'll chat to Dave. Dave can decide. I mean, he's fucking thrown Warner under the bus there, hasn't he? Like, if they don't pick Bukowski, Warner's already going to be more hated than he already is among vast, you know, swathes.
I gotta
say,
man, I gotta get myself one of these gigs as a selector because you know, there was like when Mark Waugh was doing it back in the day, he was barely watching the games, and now the selectors are like, "Who do you reckon passing the buck?"
How does it feel for you, David, chemistry wise, when you're batting and you see Joe Burns at the other end? Good looking rooster,
fine,
probably, maybe a few good stories,
maybe,
and maybe that's it.
That's
and
fine,
maybe
then.
That's Langer recreating the old side.
Yeah, I need to know more about that then. If that is the case, then I need to know the stories to feel more comfortable. But now, here's the thing. Bukowski is fucking going to be like, he's going to play test cricket for 10 years.
10 to 15.
And this is going to be this weird story where like, oh, why didn't he get picked sooner? Oh, Joe Burns kicked him out. It's like, who? Now, I'm sorry to the Queensland listeners. They probably want more representatives in their side, but you've got your Marnus. You know, he can tie you over for probably a decade as well.
Swepson's on the way in.
Swepson's on the way in. He's taking poles. He's doing good things.
Yeah.
I don't know about Joe Burns, man. He's just fine.
And that's okay.
And there's a fucking prodigal son in the wings.
Yeah. If Burns was averaging 45, great. Now we've got a battle. Now we've got harder to get out than get in. But Langer's just saying
that off.
Just because Langer says it's harder to get out than get in doesn't make it true. Like that's David Brent stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Now, one of the saddest stories of the summer, Pez, is that Coley's only going to be here for one test because he's going to go home for the first He's going home for the birth of his first child.
Yeah.
Fair enough.
Yes.
Who Amonis? Upon us.
Amonis.
has not seen someone on that team leave for family reasons, you know, or weddings or whatever. And that's what Rat Colley's doing. So it traverses all levels.
Yeah. So but, like combing around the media a little bit for this, like, you know, which kind of backwards bloke is going to raise an eyebrow at Colley doing this, you know? I mean, it was only 20 or so years ago that – you know, Shane Warne didn't go home. Good friend Shane didn't go home for Jackson's birth. He just put a little sign up over the balcony saying, "Welcome, Jacko," or whatever.
Yeah.
And I think later he said, "Oh, it was a boy thing. I just had a good vibe about him."
Mm-hmm.
So that was good. He bowled well the next day.
Yeah, it did actually, yeah.
I saw Steve Waugh say he was surprised by it, but which was a little double eye, you know, emoji to me, if you catch my drift. But, you know, when it comes to Steve Waugh, what isn't? I mean, did you catch Steve Waugh's documentary?
Did I catch it?
On the ABC last week.
It's my new ringtone.
Sensational documentary, Capturing Cricket, about rediscovering the simple joys of a game in India.
What was the highlight for you in that, Pez?
Well, look, let me set the scene.
Please.
A beautifully shot documentary.
Beautifully shot.
And it does authentically reveal Waugh's like humanitarian side.
Yeah.
Beautiful photos, etc. And you got to see a lot of things in India that you don't normally get to see as someone who hasn't been there. Really hard to pass that when you line that up with Australian cricket in the 90s.
Yeah.
But that's the conundrum that is Steve Waugh. So it was really hard not to watch that and you know, not just think, fuck, what a legend. What a legend. You know, he's done really well.
That is also true.
None of those wonderful things and those connections he forged stopped him from absolutely smashing a one-legged kid over cover early on in the doco. Kid bowling on crutches, just trying his best. Rock back. Whack.
Mr. Walker, can I bowl you? Yeah, go on then. Well, not there, though.
He's following through on crutches. There.
You having a laugh?
And, you know, you still feel safe. You smash this kid who's got one leg.
Yeah.
And he's just got those beautiful wrists.
You just recognize. I've seen that before.
Yeah, exactly.
I recognize that. Shot, I feel good shot again.
Yeah, exactly. Little idiosyncrasy of his technique, just hunched over. The eyes not quite aligned, you know, but still squinting. And he just, the hand speed, the bat speed.
Well, what was most surprising when he got his red hanky out, he just wiped the brow.
And then he says afterwards, like, did you get that shot? So it's like, oh, I'm just doing it so I get the shot. Push. How many times did he have to do that? Can you do that again?
He was on 44, according to the documentary. So seeing
him. He also said that's the first time I picked up a bat in about 20 years. So. Anyway, no, I think War with Coley, War was just like, oh, I'm surprised he's going home. But no, Coley, it's good. You know, he's having a kid. Great. Good for him.
I think it's good for him. It's a bit of a, I think like sport at the moment, man, is like it almost highlights how different everything is. Like the entire world, like here in Melbourne, things are getting back to more normal. But you look at all around the world, all around the country itself, it's like it's all a bit fucking strange, right? Yeah. Like everyone's talking over Zoom, we're all doing FaceTimes, no one's on the street, bars, you can't stand up or whatever, even if they're open, depending on what part of the world you're from. People are dying all over all this stuff. And then sport almost like highlights it because it's kind of like, especially in Europe at the moment with like football or the NBA or whatever, you know, I suppose rugby here is a bit different in New Zealand as well. But, you know, when there's no crowds, it's like, oh, this all feels a bit hollow.
Yeah.
And I feared more now that like things are pretty good in Australia, obviously, where there are going to be crowds and that's good and exciting. But then obviously things are real bad in India and like, you know, like now Coley's leaving. It's all a bit like, it's just a reminder that things are still pretty shit.
Yeah,
you know?
Well said.
And they suck for heaps of people as well. We're lucky that we've made it to summer and it's the best time of year, obviously, to be alive in Australia. And it's going to be cricket, but that's really good. But it's also a bit like, is this a tinge? Is this a tinge of like...
I think sport's just a bit of a comfort blanket. But yeah, like there's not going to be any sport this summer. I can comfortably say I don't think there's going to be any moment in the Australia-India series which will have me doing what I was doing when Nathan Lyon was bowling at Headingley, where I was blacking out.
Yeah, nude, that's right.
Crying and then in front of the TV and struggling to sleep afterwards. It's just my relationship to sport isn't that at the moment.
I wonder if they ever figured out why they put a sprinkle head on the square, like Nathan said. It's weird. Get your throws up, Pat Cummins. That's why he'll never captain Australia.
Absolutely, Salmon.
Pez, the new rules for the BBL, of course, I've kind of slipped under the radar a bit, actually. Very, very few opinions about this. But the new Big Bash rules include what's called the Power Surge, the X Factor Player, and the Bash Boost. I mean, how excited are you for the Big Bash to start in just a couple of weeks' time so you can get around this little invention?
Oh, mate, bursting. Absolutely bursting.
Yeah, your seams are bursting.
Yeah. With these three rule changes, Power Surge, X Factor Player, Bash Boost. I mean, firstly, you know, let's set the apparatus up this right. Listeners to this show will be aware of our view that the BBL, if you're a 25 plus something male, as our analytics suggest most of you are, the BBL is not for you, brothers.
Yeah.
And that's okay. You know, when I turn on the BBL, red team versus blue team or whatever, maybe a little bit of a beer, who's scoring runs? Oh, is that guy good? I like him. He's funny. You know, that's it. And I enjoy that. That's really good. We talked to Trent Woodhill. If you do want to get some more, you know, X's and O's about this, we talked to him on our Patreon. And he was, you know, one of the alchemists of these rules. He came up with the rules. He's certainly the face of the rules. He suggested that it was about, you know, competing with phones. Look, personally, and we talked to Ed about this, personally, I wonder if, you know, playing off for a bonus point after 9 or 10 overs for 1 point is going to compete against TikTok. But, you know, good luck to the BBL. There's a lot of, for me, there's a lot of AFL, like rule change chat about this. Let's just win the media cycle for a few weeks. Sure. We're on NAB Trade Radio now as we're talking. So CA have really won. Otherwise, you know, the only one I care about is the X Factor player just to watch, you know, a player get alphaed in the middle of the game.
subbed off.
And if I could have some close-up of that person, then great, I'll tune in for that.
Now in a grade sense, what I wouldn't have given to be subbed off after a couple of Saturdays after about 1 hour's play. No, it's pretty flat today, boys. I'll catch you guys next week.
Yeah,
I don't know if, you know, the Sixers chasing down the Heat's 10-over target of 85 is going to stop, you know, me from switching over to season 4 of The Crown, for instance.
Yeah, that's right.
I'm not sure. I'm not sure it will. I don't know, man. I just feel like, you know, until like they can somehow make wickets good. I don't understand pitchers. Anyone who says they understand pitchers are fucking lying, including groundsmen. You know, it's still, you know, we're playing on football grounds all year round, all that kind of stuff. Until you fix that, until you make good wickets, I don't even know if the best players need to come over here internationally. Mm. I think it probably helps, get a bit of star power. Not saying it doesn't help, but like they don't need to be all worldies. Like if the IPL is full of worldies, I fucking didn't watch a ball. couldn't find a mini.
Yeah, you can find a mini. Couldn't find a mini at exactly the time I needed it or for exactly the amount of time.
And then I was given it. And I was like, no, I'll watch that later.
Mm. Yeah. Just KO, if you are listening with the minis, can you like give us a few options? Mm. Like give us a 3 minute, a 10 minute, a 20.
Even the Queen's Gambit, I sort of skimmed that. If you can just find some minis for that as well.
She wins a lot. She's pretty good. She's prodigy chess.
Yeah, that's right. Spoilers.
Spoilers. She's good at it.
Yeah, she's good at it.
I think it's kind of a bit in vogue to be against the rule changes as well. Like, I'm a bit ambivalent about it. Like, I still think that the BBL will just be what the BBL is. It's probably found its place in the culture a little bit. Who knows what it will do? I reckon it probably won't shift the dial too much either way.
No.
I think the same people will probably tune in. And if it works well, good. I'll also be up for that.
This doesn't change the fact that it's just on. It's just on at night. You come in, you're craning your neck a bit to the TV. It's just on. You're flicking some channels. They're batting. That's a colour that I recognise. Mm. Someone's hitting a ball in that direction that I sort of recognise. That person's good.
Yeah. I think your category is the number one category for determining the success of the BBL, which is wickets. Just get the ball sliding onto the bat. It's not just fours and boundaries and sixes, and stuff like that, but just a wicket where the ball carries and a bit of pace. That's all Aussies ever need with anything, pace.
Pace.
As soon as anything gets slow or low, Australians psychologically switch off. And I'm not just talking about cricket.
Mm.
Politics, roads, climate.
NBN.
Yeah, just fast.
Yeah.
Just get it fast and bouncy.
As the WBBL is a competition that is going on at the moment, heading towards the final stage. Now, surprisingly, Beth Mooney was the first person to pass 3,000 Big Bash runs. Mm. Elise Perry joined her about 2 days after that, also passing 3,000 runs. Beth Mooney sort of slid under the radar and did in the World Cup as well. I mean, she was player of the tournament in the World Cup, had the most runs, but doesn't have the star power of Elisa Healy, who the next day hit a 50-ball 100.
Mm. And 48. It's
48 balls.
48 pills.
48 pills.
100.
Seeds.
Agates. Welcome to the synonym show.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to hear it, Higos, because it's been a bit of a duality of like Healy and Perry for the last couple of years. Of course, Lanning as well. She sort of exists outside of that. It's just like, well, Lanning, prodigal runs from the start to the end.
Yeah.
I'm happy to see other names pop up. I'm happy to see Beth Mooney start to dominate. Happy to see, I mean, she has been for a long time as well. Yeah. Rachel Haynes, these kind of guys. I just need names to be succeeding wildly so that when I just briefly flick onto the WBBL, which I should do more of, someone's just making me happy thinking, you know, Australia's going to keep winning.
I'm really keen for Australia to keep pushing money into the female game so we just dominate for just forever.
Absolutely.
I mean, remember how good that was
in
March.
Get upset when they don't win.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Fucks this
exactly.
shit. That kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Now, Pez, before we go we're going to throw it to Steve Smith and then after that, Ed Cowan.
Mm.
But before then, I just want to go back to the Australian India series and what's happening with the Barefoot Circle and Black Lives Matter movement in Australia, which we've spoken about in the past. But it's interesting what's happening here in Australia because what they're moving towards is they're going to go for the Barefoot Circle thing, which is like an act of like in reconciliation with the Indigenous people of Australia. Interesting things around this as well. Now, I think it's first and foremost, got to say, it's great that they're doing something.
Mm.
That's the first thing. You're never going to go from 0 to 100 where it's like, oh, we just fixed racism by doing this one thing, by doing this one weird trick.
Mm.
You know, that was never going to happen, but it's something. Mm. But it's the language that's around this, isn't it?
Yeah, celebrating. Well, you're totally right. And off the top, 10 years ago, if someone had told you that the Australian men's cricket team would be marking Indigenous Australia before an international game, well, we would have been very proud, but it would have been very surprising.
Yeah.
And then we've noticed that grade teams have done as well. You know, I was really proud to see the two grade teams that I've played in do it.
Yeah.
So you've got to acknowledge it. Mm.
You're speaking about the reconciliation round.
Yeah, right.
Which happened in
exactly.
Sydney.
Wouldn't have happened
on the weekend.
When we played in the 2000s. I noticed Cummins said, we've come together as a team, think this is the best way we can demonstrate anti-racism as well as celebrating Indigenous culture. Langer was like, reflection of consistency within Australian cricket and a sign of respect and recognition to our Aboriginal culture and heritage. Now, like what they've decided to do is against the backdrop. You can't divorce it from the Black Lives Matter movement. And, you know, people are asking, well, are you guys going to take a knee as well? They've decided to go for the Barefoot Circle. Now, like, I'm keen to know what you think about this, but like, with Michael Holding's, you know, gut-punching start to the English summer on Sky's very passionate monologue about Black Lives Matter, following that we saw England and West Indies take a knee. We were always asking, I wonder where CA is going to land with this. I think you spoke very well about it a few months ago. And this is where they've landed or are landing.
Mm-hmm.
They've put together this array of activities and initiatives to play their part in what is a global moment, undoubtedly created by the Black Lives Matter
mm-hmm.
movement. And yeah, we've noted, you know, it's a step forward, almost hard to imagine from previous eras, you know, especially, and you've got to be happy if you want to see better outcomes for Indigenous Australia and for our country, mm-hmm. for everyone involved. This CA doing this is not just a result of their own work alone. It's the result of activism and confrontation from around the world.
Yeah,
you know, they are reacting as a result of all this stuff happening. And, you mentioned, like I note the word celebrate popping up every so often when it comes to Indigenous Australia and this. Oh, we want to celebrate their culture. And it's a curious word, I think, because, like, you can't argue with celebrating, can you? We want to do something positive. We want to celebrate Indigenous Australia.
Yeah.
You wonder how much heavy lifting that word is doing, you know, as a means of justifying a move away from taking a knee, for example, which is a little bit more confrontational, more solemn. You know, we hear a lot in Australia about celebrating Indigenous culture when we have a global event. Mm-hmm. You know, the Olympics comes out, we're celebrating Indigenous Australia. Sporting events, we celebrate Indigenous Australia.
Yeah.
It feels like when others are watching us, you know, we're always celebrating. When they're not watching us, it feels a bit less so.
Yeah.
And, like, personally speaking, I think something more solemn would be more honest and consistent. I know Langer spoke about consistency, and he's spoken, apparently, with a lot of Indigenous leaders. So, you know, you have to respect that. But I don't think any of these actions would be happening were it not for Black Lives Matter. So it is connected to Black Lives Matter, which is a more solemn movement. You can see in Australia that, you know, when you talk about Black Lives Matter now, though, you know, taking a knee, it's like ideologically dangerous. You know, you're a lefty Marxist cuck. If you want to go down that path, I heard somebody else say it carries ideological freight, you know, and that makes us uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
But Black Lives Matter started this whole thing. Without Black Lives Matter, Australia isn't talking about this. Mm-hmm. So I can, you know, well, look, I can't prove that, but I reckon that's pretty fair to say.
Yeah.
Given how tough it is to make progress on this stuff, you know, you have to acknowledge a step forward, but you've got to keep an eye on it too. How long are we going to be celebrating for, do you reckon, Higgins?
Yeah, that's interesting, mate. That's interesting because it's because, for instance, I know that I'd imagine the West Indies would be very upset that, like, England players did it during the West Indies series, and as soon as West Indies took off, Higgins doing it against Australia. Wouldn't have thought so. No. Nah, don't worry about it. Now, what's interesting as well, that England are going to South Africa. They're playing some ODI cricket, and they're playing Test. They might not be. I can't remember. Anyway, England are going to South Africa, and they've decided they're not going to take a knee. And so it is, you make a very good point. Like, when the eyes of the world are upon you, then it's like, nah, things are good. We'll celebrate. Can you celebrate before you go through some hardship? Now, it might seem a little bit overcritical because we've spoken about this for a little bit of wine, being like, oh, they can't do anything right.
Yeah.
You have to say it's a great first step, and you're never going to go from 0 to 100 where you just solve it. That's never going to happen. But I'm not sure you can go through, I'm not sure you can get to the celebrating bit without taking some pain first. And by pain being a part of a white Australia, that includes me, that includes you. And, like, you have to check your white privilege sometimes. You have to think about things. People are going to see the Australian Indigenous pattern on their T20 shirt and be like, fucks this shit.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're that brittle and your toxic masculinity and your whiteness, the pattern on a shirt offends you, fuck off. You're a fucking dopey cunt. You don't deserve to fucking celebrate anyone, let alone the Australian cricket team.
Or, you know, keep exploring, read a book, you know.
Read a book, that's also better than what I said.
Carlos Brathwaite from the West Indies, he was like, he says, why did it stop when we were gone?
Yeah, right.
Anyway, the other element to this is, you know, India and Dada and what they think as well. And
that's,
you know, ultimately that's what these things come down to. So, you know, this little, I guess, our little discussion here is more about just keeping an eye on things. I feel like celebrate is a curious word. It's hard to argue with, but, you know, there you go.
It's just a little bit sweepy.
Just a bit sweepy.
Under that rug.
Bit of lucky country stuff in here. Yeah, it's like, the knee, that feels a bit uncomfortable. Yeah. Celebrate, though. Oh, we love celebrating it. Yeah. How long? How long are we going to do it? Let's check in after a couple of weeks.
Yeah.
Just checking in.
Now, no one's talking about what 5G is going to do for the ball this summer. That's going to move it around.
That's a good point. And I also, you know, will Cam Green play over Stoinis? I think it's Stoinis' time. Green, though, is blonde and 6'7". What is he?
I don't know. Do
you want to talk about that?
Can we get him in here? We've got to get him in here so I can literally measure him.
Yeah.
It's or we very, could just ask grainy. Him.
Yeah. No, this is much more comfortable space.
This is much, actually much more comfortable. Yeah. For much more.
Yeah. Is he 140s or
What's going on there, Cam?
Welcome to the Woke Show.
Pez, Steve Smith is here to kick off our summer. Or is it Ed Cowan? Because Ed Cowan is the person that kicks off our summer. Long time listening to the show, we'll appreciate that.
We've gone with Smith up top because of, you know, it's Steve Smith. And
out of politeness, I think.
And on that note, you know, as you know, we only partner with brands that align perfectly with our organisation. This is as you've well known.
Yes.
And with that in mind, we're actually thrilled to welcome this partner. I'm not even hamming this up, and listeners will understand when I say this. We've had a dalliance with them already. Listeners know that, but it's the man behind the famous line, "Get a few, did you?" That's right. Ponting Wines. I'm not kidding here.
Oh, no.
TGC's lined up with Ponting Wines. Ponting Wines are going to be bringing us this interview, our interviews all summer. Mm. And speaking of get a few, we got a few.
Mm.
Ponting Wines.
Well, you did. I haven't got them yet.
No, sorry. Yeah. Well, there's sort of six and there's half and I haven't got them around yet.
Why are your lips red?
I can see what they mean by dedicated craftsmanship. That's the only thing I have to say. No, we're going to get through the summer. We're going to get some special. I'm very happy to be with Ponting Wines just for the humor of it. But we're going to get some special offers set up for TGC listeners.
Right.
But in the meantime, if you're impossibly keen to furnish your palate with a great drop, head to pontingwines.com.au. Great to be in business with you, Rick. And here are the interviews. Righto, here goes. Here's some numbers for you. And the man that I'm looking at on screen will know more than anybody that really, as a cricketer, all we are is just numbers. 7,227 test runs at 62.84. A higher score of 239, 2600s, 2950s, 11,707 first class runs, it's 57.95, 4200s, 4950s there. There's Ashes, there's World Cups, and he's also worn a taped over Aussie lid at Sutherland training. We've DM'd him a million times on Insta, zero replies. I heard he read everything, but anyway. But finally, he's agreed to chat on this important show, or at least Cricket Australia's agreed, and he's been dragged in. It's a historic moment for the Grade Cricketer because we're chatting with Stephen Peter Devereaux-Smith. Steve, welcome to the Grade Cricketer podcast.
Cheers, guys. Thanks for having me.
Smudge, if we can call you that.
For
a cricketing doyen, you're still old enough to have quite a deep connection to Grade Cricket. Like, how would you describe your relationship to Grade Cricket?
How would I describe my relationship? I don't know. I've played a bit over the years. Obviously played a fair bit in my year off. Good fun being back around the boys at the Sharks. So it was good fun. Enjoyed it. Good crew and loved it.
Interesting you say that because we've spoken to a few people at the Sharks.
Yeah.
And I just want to kick off with a true or false because you say you have a good time and all that kind of gear and pretty vague actually because most people's experience of great cricket isn't that, as we established on this show. And so here's a story. I think it will endear you to many people because they can relate, but here's what I've been told. You once walked across your stumps at Glen McGrath Oval and left a ball that hit you outside the line and you got triggered, to which you screamed, "Waste of my fucking time," on entry to the change room. Does that ring a bell? And now that, you know, Sydney Grade Cricket sold its media rights, should there be DRS in Sydney Grade Cricket?
Yeah, good point.
Maybe. I felt like I was a bit stiff that day. So, I wasn't happy in the moment. I was committed to try and do my best for the team, wasn't I? So, no good. I think that happened.
Grade Cricket can feel like a waste of time, can't it?
Yeah.
Nah, I don't think so, but I wasn't happy with that one.
I want to just highlight, I often ask, like, when did you know that you were good, Steve? And that's, you know, it's kind of irrelevant because you're probably a gun your entire life. But I was just going through some numbers, as I like to do from time to time.
Mm-hmm.
And I was going back to 2010, Steve, where you went on a bit of a run. Now, you were 20 years old at this stage. It was January 2010, if I can take you back there.
Mm.
One weekend, you hit 171 not out for Sutherland. Then the following week, you hit 134 not out of 67 balls in the space of 2 weeks. You were 20 years old. I think that was the same year you got picked for New South Wales for the first time. And it was in the same era that, you know, Australia was still trying to find the next Shane Warne, which I think we probably still are trying to do in some capacity.
And we never will.
But, you know, you get picked for Australia and New South Wales, it's sort of a bowler, but you just hit, like, you know, you're 20 years old, you're hitting 171 not out and 134 of 67 rocks in first grade, you're going to pick as a bowler. Are you thinking, guys, can I just have a stick? I don't really want to bowl.
Pretty much, yeah. That's what I was thinking the whole time. Always been more of a batter. So, obviously, like you said, post-Shane Warne, they were searching for for a spinner, and I happen to be a chubby little blonde-haired leg spinner. So sort of they were trying to, I guess, share some comparisons. I think that was probably where it was left. But it was, yeah, my opportunity in playing as a bowler. But, yeah, always wanted to just bat, really.
Just around that same time, maybe even earlier for your time at Sutherland, yeah. You also played in the same season as Tim Bresnan was out. I'm just telling you things you already know. He was 18, you were 16. Like, we've had a bit to do with Brez. He tells a story. He claims that you hit him up for a game at Yorkshire when you were 16. He was out in Sydney, said, oh, can you get me a game at Yorkshire? To which he replied, no, would you like some of my gloves instead? Is that true? And could you be playing for England if he'd rated you back then?
Yeah.
I don't know about playing for England, but I was trying to get a county gig, that's for sure. You know, I did have an English passport, mum's English, so sort of that was my way in the door. But, yeah, I was trying to do whatever I could, really, to leave school and try and pursue a career in cricket. And, yeah, obviously didn't rate me too highly back then.
Do you remember that? Like, do you remember that exchange?
Yeah,
I remember having a chat with him saying, yeah, I'd like to come over, maybe start me in some second-team cricket if you can. It's probably a bit ahead of myself, but I was, yeah, just trying to get better as a cricketer and, you know, have some experiences. And I kind of always wanted to – I remember I went on a tour in 2000 and I was 16 with like a New South Wales under-17s and 19s tour where we played against some like county academies and stuff and just – loved it. I thought it was magnificent. So kind of wanted to just go and try and play some county cricket and just progress my skills. And yeah, didn't rate me, so didn't get an opportunity.
But he did say, do you want some of my kit? Because he felt sorry for you or something like that. So
I think I stole one of his bats, yeah.
Worth it. Well, I just obviously in your year off, Steve, 2018, you averaged 57.8, 60-odd. Which is significantly less than your test average.
In grade cricket,
yeah. So, I mean, how much harder is Sydney test cricket compared to facing Stuart Broad in England?
It's different. Yeah. Certainly not the, I guess, the pace on the ball that you get in test cricket. Kind of got to make your own pace and play probably a bit more aggressive. Yeah. If I had my time again, I think I'd be a bit more aggressive and not try and play as such a, you know, just a batter, just take the game on a bit more. But yeah, it's different. Those rego balls are, you know, the big seams on those things. So
that was my issue.
Different to the old turf.
Yeah.
But yeah, that's it. It was good fun.
Yeah. Now I think he has a question about this as well, and with a different angle. But like you garnered a lot of attention a few weeks ago for your rendition of All I Need to See by Mitch Russell. apparently there's plenty of strong guitarists out there who are around the world who are happy to share that view. But I'm told you actually bullied into being the first player to sing a song on debut for Sutherland, which has since been done 63 times. So you sort of started a tradition without really knowing. Now, do you remember being bullied into doing that at Sutherland? And what song did you sing?
I do remember being bullied into it. Yeah, I was 16. It was my first game. We played Gordon at Kalara. We'd just come off a terrific win. We lost the first innings and we won outright. So boys were up and about. It was my first game. I was pretty excited.
Did you get any?
I was getting worded up throughout the game about, you know, the boys were saying, you know, I think Jason Young, who else was there? A few of the older boys, Matthew O'Brien, they're all saying, well, what song are you going to sing? You know, what do you mean? They're like, well, everyone that's playing their first game has to sing a song. And I think it was Peter Dugmore, one of the guys was going, he sung, I can't remember what it was. But the boys were saying, I sung this, I sung that, what's your song? And I was kind of, you know, just trying to come up with something. I was pretty nervous out there playing, just thinking about this song that I've got to sing in front of everyone. So, ended up going with Happy Birthday to my good friend now, Luke Dudman, and started off a tradition. And since me, I think everyone that's debuted had to sing a song. So, glad I'm able to start off this tradition for the Sharks.
Sung Happy Birthday.
Happy Birthday.
Nice.
Classic song.
It's a good song.
It's actually a hard song, Happy Birthday. I went to a choir school and they said Happy Birthday is one of the hardest songs to sing, genuinely. A lot of people have to sing it to get into the choir. Anyway.
Sing a bit, did you?
Yeah, there you go.
That's all right.
It's for another time. It's another podcast. Another close friend of the show, Steve, is Steve O'Keefe Sock, who obviously you live with in the Eastern Suburbs some time ago. And he was telling us a story, you know, you have obviously famously a lot of mannerisms, and we wondered if that also, you know, extended to around the house. And Sock said that he was like watching you was like playing Pac-Man, just going around the house, just sort of walking in between rooms, just between rooms. You know, what I'm asking is, has Sock thanked you for picking him in Puno?
For what, sorry?
Has Sock thanked you for picking him in Puno? What have you got 12 for?
In Puno? You might have done. You know, bowled pretty well, didn't he? Suited him down to a tee that wicket. So, I don't know about this walking between rooms like a Pac-Man business.
Just a messenger. Yep. Mm.
Yeah, that's it. So, had some good times together, that's for sure.
Yeah. Mm.
Oh, sounds like he's off the Christmas card list there. let's talk about cricket. You've obviously amassed an eye-watering record when it comes to batting, Steve. And people recently are sort of lazily grouping you in with Coley Williamson and sometimes Babar Azam and Joe Root as the big four or the big boys, you know, of Test batting. Mm. I'll say it for you. I mean, you've got almost exactly the same number of runs as Virat in 13 fewer matches. He averages 53, you average 62. You know, at what point are you thinking, sweetie, you know, there's only one big boy in Test cricket and it ain't Virat?
Oh, nice one. I don't think about all that stuff. Just play the game, do the best I can, and yeah. See what happens.
Play the game, see what happens. Average 62. That's what I did. Now I do a podcast with you. Yeah. So I don't want to, you know, Last Ashes was just one of the most amazing individual performances of all time. No question about that. And, you know, basically single-handedly retained the Ashes. I mean, so how satisfying, therefore, was it to see Marnus smash Colin de Gronholm and take Test Player of the Year away from you?
No, he played well last summer, didn't he?
He played well. Yes. Yeah, he did.
Yeah. It was against Colin de Gronholm.
Jeez. It was great to see everyone doing well.
Yeah.
Didn't spend a lot of time in the middle last summer. Davey and bloody Marnus were taking up all the runs, so it wasn't too many to be got when I got out there, unfortunately.
Well, I thought because you had played great cricket, you know, facing Colin de Gronholm basically every week, I thought you might be more prepared.
In twos.
Poor Colin.
Yeah, he got me out of the SCG, didn't he? And, might have heard a few words similar to what you said earlier on about this waste of time business.
he's brushed us on this podcast for that long. It's funny talking about bumping you out. You know, you're doing a media day today and we're your last one, so I'm sure you've already answered plenty of questions about it. I actually find it pretty funny. I wondered if you'd actually considered a different public approach to it, because I've noticed at the moment you're sort of saying, well, look, they can do that if they want. They can waste their energy. The other guy's got the runs. I face plenty of balls. Very sensible, tactical approach to it. Andrew McDonald saying, oh, I've not really seen it be that big a weakness for it. And I'm just thinking, like, if you were truly hoping they brought it on, you know, brought on bumping you, wouldn't you say actually in the press, like, yeah, it's a massive problem for me. You know, I hate it. Please don't bowl there to me. Like, have you ever thought about that? Something to think about.
I said today that it's a form of flattery that they, you know, it's the only way they feel that they can get me out. So if they've exhausted all other options and want to go to that approach, it's kind of gives me confidence to know that, you know, they've exhausted all other options. So it's a form of flattery for me and just gives me confidence. Mm.
Haven't you been really struggling with that ball on your hip, just sort of getting it to the leg side? Haven't you been really? That's been a real weakness.
They should focus there, shouldn't
they? Shouldn't you focus on that? Sort of bite your pads maybe?
Yeah. Just bowl straight.
Maybe, yeah. I think that's a good idea, yeah.
I hate it.
No, seriously. I hate it.
Just on that, Steve, I understand it might be an unwelcome distraction for you, but you would have been answering questions about, you know, because you're trying to make a million runs against India this summer and you sort of missed out last summer, and I sort of expect a lot of compensation runs from you this summer like you did with the Ashes. You won't talk about it, but I think that's how you work. But the captaincy question is going to linger until Payne's successor is appointed. And, like, for context, and this is only my view, but, like, I think history will eventually show that, you unfairly wore the punishment for decades of poor behaviour in Australian cricket. But hypothetically speaking, given everything that's happened, like, were you given the job again, do you think your experiences would make you a different leader second time round? And if so, how would you be different?
Look, in regards to the job, I don't know. It's, you know, there's, we'll see what happens, but I think certainly my experiences, I've learned a lot from. I think I'm a better person, better, more equipped, more aware of my surroundings and things like that. So, from that point of view, I think I've, you know, made a lot of, you know, progression there. But we'll see what happens. You know, at the moment, as I've said numerous times, Tim and Payne are doing they're doing great jobs. So, you know, I support them as much as I can and hopefully score some runs this summer and help us have success.
I suppose famously, like, Australia don't really pick bowlers as their captains, and then you as a bowler probably can't get the job again, right?
Well, if I can't score any runs, I might have to start bowling again. So I was pretty disappointed with my batting in the IPL. So I actually thought about bringing the spinners back out to have some kind of contribution. But, yeah, see how we go.
I just think you're always so, you know, humble and almost vague about scoring runs. I mean, like, even as you say before, like, oh, just, you know, play the game to enjoy it and see what happens. It's kind of like Bradman was always like, oh, play the game for the game's sake and keep your eye on the ball. You know, average 99.94. Yeah. So there's something ticking underneath there, I think, with you, but you obviously don't want to bring that out. Like, you know, I'm curious about where you see yourself in your career at the moment, what people can expect. Like, without putting numbers on it, like, if the start of your international career was kindergarten and the end of your international career was year 12, you know, what year are you in at the moment, do you reckon?
I think I'm probably closer to the end than the start. I don't know.
Junior high?
Uni?
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how we go over the next few years. You know, while I still love training, love trying to get better and, you know, just enjoy every moment of it, then, you know, I'll play for as long as I can. So I guess time will tell, wait and see. Hopefully the body stays good and, fingers crossed, you know, I've had some, you know, haven't had many injuries, probably a few head knocks, so don't know what's going on there, but hopefully don't have too many of those anymore. They're not overly comfortable, so yeah, see where things end up.
Obviously, the entire summer you're going to be spending in, you know, different stages of lockdown and bubbles and all that sort of thing, Steve. I mean, everyone that we speak to says that, you know, oh, geez, I'd hate to be stuck with Marnus for the entirety of this pandemic, but I get the feeling like you guys might be sharing a bunk bed. Are you guys just shadow batting nonstop? What's going on? Are you spending a lot of time with him?
Yeah. Not at the moment. He's in another hotel in Sydney. We're out at Homebush, so okay. In our proper quarantine. So not at the moment, but I'll see him in a few days' time, and I'm sure he'll be stuck to my hip then. talking about batting probably more often than not. Yeah. But, look, he's good company. Can't keep him around for too long though. You got to push him off and give some time to someone else though.
Mm-hmm. We're getting the wrap up here, Higos. You have anything else to finish off with? No. Thanks so much for your time, Steve. Again, historic moment to have the great man Peter Devereux Smith on the Great Cricketer Podcast. Thanks for your time, mate, and sorry for all those Insta DMs. I mean, I was told you read them all. Maybe you did, but it's great to have you on. And, all the best this summer. I see that little glint in your eye. I think it could be quite scary how many runs are amassed, given that, you know, Wagner and de Gronholm gave us a hard time last summer.
Cheers, boys. Pleasure.
Okay. Here's some numbers for those who've forgotten. I'm going to do it a bit quicker this time. Okay. All right. 1,000 test runs, 10,000 first-class runs, 7,000 first-grade runs, ton at the Gabba against Steyn, Morkel, Flander and Rory Kleinveld. Now making a contribution as a Cricket New South Wales board member, sharing razor-sharp views as an occasional member of the Cricket Commentariat, a sustainability-focused entrepreneur with Tripod Coffee, and member of private investment firm TDM Growth Partners. He's our friend, he's your friend, and without doubt the best friend of the great cricketer, TGC Summer. can only start once we've heard from this great man. It's Ed Cowan. G'day, Ted.
Fellas, you've had me back. This is huge. There's some nice little bolt-ons to the intro, particularly the addition of Rory Kleinfeld. What a bowler he was.
Is probably.
Thanks for calling him out.
Yeah, good.
Ted, look, let's just jump right in because there's some news off the press as we go to where. We're sort of talking on Monday afternoon. Cricket Australia have put David Warner up today to help pump up the summer. He's answering a lot of questions. Now, earlier today, talking about the Pekowski-Burns selection conundrum, David Warner said, and this is a quote, so don't shoot the messenger, "For me, to be honest, yeah. I've had over a dozen opening partners and it's never been quite stable." He has had over a dozen opening partners, of which Ed Cowan was one. Mm. Now, I just want to put
a dozen in Test cricket. A dozen.
He says over a dozen.
Over a dozen.
Can you name the 12 opening batsmen?
I'll have a go.
Yeah, I'll have a go.
Do we confirm that I don't have anything in front of me here?
Yeah.
Okay. Phil Hughes, Shane Watson, Chris Rogers, Matthew Renshaw, Cameron Bancroft, Ed Cowan, Sean Marsh, Usman Khawaja, Glenn Maxwell in one game. There's nine.
Did you say Joe Burns?
Joe Burns.
Still a couple to go to get over a dozen, but anyway.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's right. Still three away.
Did he open with Benno in a game?
Sounds like it.
Now,
Hayden.
Ed, the gold standard partnership, as we know, is Hayden and Langer, which produced 5,500 runs, give or take, an average of 50.
Right.
You guys, you and Dave, by contrast, hit nearly 1,500 runs at 44.85. So that's five fewer runs per innings. Were you aware that Davey, until today, that Davey was looking for more stability in that partnership? And in fact, if you were advising Will Pekowski, what would you say Davey is looking for in a partner?
Straight off the bat, you're into it. Unstable. That's amazing. Look, to be honest.
Was it not quite stable?
Not quite stable.
Mm. Not quite stable. I mean, it's amazing to think that he can think back 10 years to when we opened the batting together, considering, you know, what happened last week might elude poor little Davey's memory. But Will Pekowski, what could you say to him? The man's an enigma. You just got to obviously be on side. You've got to pump him up. Great shot, Davey. Good stuff, mate. Keep going. I don't know. I mean, you caught me off guard with that, to be honest.
Well, do you think that's what Joe Burns is doing? Because what the word is, I suppose, we don't know how full on this is and whether like the selectors have literally gone to Warner and said, who do you want in the side? You know, you're literally banned from leading the side, but why don't you select one player in the team? That's not you. Yeah. But, like, what do you think Burns is doing to earn Warner's respect because he averages, you know, late 30s and stuff like that? What is it about Burns that Warner likes?
I don't know. He must be buying him a few Guzman and Gomez burritos, maybe.
You invest in them.
Didn't he call Joe Burns a rare unit? He said he's the rare unit.
Right.
Big call.
I think maybe that's it. You've got to be so self-deprecating that you've got to take the rareness off the other bloke. I think you make a good point, though, Sam. Since when does the opening batsman become a selector?
Yeah.
Isn't that the selector's job?
Well, and
you walk out to bat with who you're told to walk out to bat with, don't you?
Yeah. Well, I sort of feel like that's maybe not Warner's fault. He's just sort of been thrown under the bus a little bit there. We don't know how big it is.
It hasn't been the first time. The bus. That is the metaphorical bus.
Not to be confused with Muhammad Abbas, who's an opening bowler for Pakistan. I was actually going to ask you. I was going to ask you before, Ted.
I was confused.
I get confused. I don't really follow the cricket much. I was going to ask you, Ted, because I was looking back on your career in anticipation of just this chat. In fact, every time we get together, I just like to catch up on what I need to know about. I was looking at your debut at Boxing Day Test. Let me tell you what happened. Boxing Day Test, you hit 68, and you're batting with
not
Ricky.
Out.
Yeah, well, we'll get to that. And you're batting with Ricky Ponting, and that was like 2011. Ricky Ponting was like that was the last summer of in Australia that we saw the best of Ponting. He hit like 200 in maybe Perth, I think. With
Adelaide. Going
Adelaide,
on
Adelaide, yeah, Adelaide. And so you're opening the batting. You go with Warner, and I want to know what the disparities and conversations between opening the batting with Dave Warner, then Ponting coming in at four, I suppose, because Sean Marsh was batting three, wasn't he? Like, what are the chats? Do you even remember the chats, or were you so like locked in to the innings itself?
God, I mean, There wasn't much to talk about.
Is it all the same? Just like work hard.
I'm going to get you on strike and you're going to try and slog it, this bloke out of the attack. Right. You ready? Back up.
Tactics. Yeah, good.
That's exactly. Yeah. That was the extent of it. But it was, I mean, looking back, it was unstable. So now that he's alluded to it, they were like the Pan Pacific tectonic plates, you know, the San Andreas fault line.
Yeah.
That was Dave Warner and Ed Cowan opening the batting.
Yeah.
Who was the unstable one now that we're sort of 10 years after the fact?
Yeah.
I'll let you be the judge there, Sam.
Ted, do you think it's a good sign that this of all things in the, speaking of the instability, that's been kind of the catch cry of Australian cricket for the last 5 to 10 years, that this is really the talking point ahead of the test summer, at least. Who's the good player that will partner Warner? Yeah. You know, is that a kind of a backhanded compliment to CA that this is what we're talking about?
I mean, there are lots of other issues we'd love to talk about, but it's a home summer. So we know that Dave Warner's probably going to average 95 at least before going away to the subcontinent and, you know, hitting the balancing act. We should be talking about the WBBL. We should be talking about BBL rule changes. We should be talking about the death of ODI cricket. We should be talking about Virat Kohli only being around for one test this summer. They're the big issues that I want to, you know, really dig into if you're up for it. Maybe you can put that behind the paywall in Patreon.
Nice. There it is. There's the first one.
We could have like a little 6-hour powwow and you could charge people $2 or $3. I don't know. What's the going rate these days for a Patreon membership for the great cricketer?
He's pretending like he's not a subscriber. Adam Samper is. Mm. I mean, to Pez's question though there, Ted, like, I mean, what is there to get excited about this summer? Because, you know, without the crowds, it kind of feels like, oh, we're just waiting for the crowds to come back. You know, Kohli's only here for one test. You know, big bash rule changes feels weird. Is there something to look forward to hang our hat on this summer? Is it a Pekowski? Is it a Cameron Green? Is it a Chris Green?
Chris Green.
Yeah.
Who knows? I mean, Chris Green could make just a bolt for the test team as the spinning all-rounder that we've been crying out for. In fact, you wouldn't put it past Trevor Holmes maybe calling out Chris Green's name, meaning Cameron Green, and accidentally Chris Green slips out, and the next minute Chris Green's, you know, slips into the test team bowling some of those off spinners. Look, the test series against India, I'm pumped for. I don't know why you're talking it down. He goes,
I'm not,
because
I'm asking.
There will be crowds. There won't be capacity crowds, but let's be honest, test cricket in Australia, you know, particularly most stadiums, we don't get capacity. So let's just enjoy the contest. I think India will be good without being great, minus Kohli. Their fast bowlers won't be what they were 2 years ago. I think you should be talking cricket up, mate. You're a stakeholder in the game now. You rely on the strength of Australian cricket.
I'm more of an AFL guy, as you know, Ted. But like, why do you say that the pace bowlers won't be what they were 2 years ago? Why do you think that?
Well, you're a close follower of the game. He goes, you know, that they've suffered some back injuries. Sharma's hurt his side recently. Shami. Back injuries, Bumrah back injuries in the last 2 years, and it's hard coming back from that as a fast bowler. So I just don't know if they'll. I think we saw them at their absolute best 2 years ago, and they sniffed a series win with no Warner, no Smith, and they got to take that home. It's just going to be harder for them this time.
You mentioned Virat Kohli earlier there, Ted. I mean, he's the most kind of well-known cricketer in the world. He's, you know, 80 million Instagram followers, and particularly in Australia, there's a love-hate relationship with him that basically comes out of respect, I think, for the fact that he kind of plays like us in our combative nature, so we respect him, but the players don't seem to rate him that much, and they try and out for him stuff. I noticed there's a bit of press lately, particularly coming out of particularly through an interview with Adam Zampa, where he's actually quite a good guy and he loves vegan food and stuff like that. Is there a softening of Virat Kohli's image happening at the moment in Australia, and is it warranted? You know, what was your experience playing against him? Do you think he's a changed man? How should we relate to Virat Kohli? Advise us.
I think maybe he has mellowed a little bit. I never found him a mellow character myself. It sounds like Zamps knows where his bread's buttered. And the IPL, if you were bowling, you know, leg spin for 10 years in the IPL, you'd probably want to buddy up to Virat Kohli, wouldn't you? So, yeah, good bloke, vegan, lovely fella.
Loves his coffee, yeah.
Pay me my $1.5 million and I'll bolt you on the nets for 6 weeks straight.
Are you the only Australian cricketer with that interest in India? Because I find it funny because, like, I always wonder, like, what the relationship is between the Australian and Indian cricket team, because for the most part, you know, like when the Kiwis come over, it's like, you know, we can relate to them on some level, same as the English. But the Indians, it's just like culturally, it's such a different experience. Cricket's in a very different place as well between India and Australia. What do you talk about after the game? And like all the people that you know, have interest in India are always like, they're very respective of the Indian people, never say a bad word. You know, like when Gilchrist said in his book that like Tendulkar was hard to find for a beer afterwards, it was like one of the most shocking things that's ever happened. He's like, well, he probably fucking was hard to find for a beer after the game if he just rolled him for, you know, 6 and 10.
So is there a question there, he goes, or was that a...
I think he goes read Adam Gilchrist's book.
I didn't actually. I just sparked notes.
Looked at the pictures. I think the gap is narrowing culturally from a cricket point of view, just because the teams are playing so much against each other and also with each other through various leagues around the world. So I don't think the Australian team, the Indian team are best mates. I don't think there's much socialising in the change rooms after, but, you know, times might have changed now that there's a bit of bread to be buttered.
When you played in that series in 2011-12, Kohli was batting at 6, and it was probably the beginning of his career, I'd imagine. Dhoni was captain. Then he didn't play the last test of that series, and Sehwag took over, I think. And did you think then – I think Kohli's got 100 in that series. Then he got a few other runs other times. Was he going to be the superstar that he is now? Was it spoken about in the Australian team then?
He was the young up-and-coming gun. He obviously looked like he could bat. There was no doubt about that. Like at the same time, Sharma and these other young players you could have put money on as well to be their next star. So there was plenty of pressure on Kohli, and he's shown his class, particularly in one-day cricket. This could be slightly controversial. In Test cricket, I don't know if we've seen the absolute best of him. I think he's undoubtedly the best white ball player in the world. Mm. But in Test cricket, he probably should have really elevated himself above, you know, the Smiths and the Williamsons and these other great batsmen of the generation just based on how good he is. But I don't know if he's quite done that.
Mm. You just got to hang it out outside off for a little while, just nick him off. So,
So just stay patient. Stay just top of off, occasional bouncer, stay patient.
Speaking of staying patient, let's talk about the new BBL rules. You mentioned that was something that is an interesting talking point. So we spoke with the architect of these new rules, Trent Woodhill, on the Patreon last week. And one thing he mentioned was some of the studies that he did in England with the 100 were around how much kids were actually like picking up their phones during the cricket. And so he said, you know, whose line was it? Was it Michael Atherton or somebody said that the BB, you know, that they're waging a war against Netflix, sports competing against Netflix.
I was Martin Luther King.
I always mix up Michael Atherton and Martin Luther King. Yeah, so the new BBL rules. Martin Luther King was ahead of his time with Netflix, RIP. But that's a conflict for you if the BBL rules are waging a war against Netflix, because you're obviously on Netflix in Death of a Gentleman. Will the super sub bonus points and mucking around with the power play create enough micro competitions to challenge the all conquering power of the Queen's Gambit or TikTok?
Yeah.
No, I'm going to go to the heart of this question. Is I think you're asking, what do you think about the rule changes? But I'm not sure if it can I confirm that's where you want me to take this?
I think the point of the rule changes, if we get to the heart of it, is that they think that all these micro competitions they're setting up, all these micro things happening within the game, will somehow stop kids from picking up their phones. Mm-hmm. Do you think it's going to do that?
I don't think that's the heart of it. I don't. Okay. I think that's... That might have been, sadly, Trent's initiation as to why they were bringing these ridiculous rule changes. But I think at the heart of it, they've seen declining TV ratings. That's not because people are playing with their phones. That's because the cricket's been average. It's been played on terrible wickets at times, and it goes for about 32 weeks too long. So why would you – it's like getting a crappy meal served up, and then you say, this tastes no good. And then they get the salt and pepper out and they just sprinkle a bit of salt and they go, taste that. That tastes so much better now, doesn't it? You're like, no, it doesn't. It's still crap. So
are you one of those guys who does that at restaurants?
Yeah,
I can see you sending some wine back.
Yeah.
No, but you get my point. Like the ingredients to a successful Big Bash are pretty clear to anyone involved in the game. It's like get the best players in the world playing, get them playing when people want to watch, get them playing great cricket on great wickets, and people will want to watch on TV and all this periphery stuff. You know, I'm all for innovation, but innovation that's based in fact rather than the, you know, these stories that we want to tell ourselves as to why we're going to bring them in. Why wouldn't we trial these innovations elsewhere? And if they do in fact create better games of cricket, you bring them into the Big Bash. But at this stage, they haven't been tested anywhere, not in club cricket, not in any other form of cricket. It's just two dudes sitting in a room wondering up, what can we do next?
Isn't that exactly the thing though, Ted? Like the hardest thing that would probably work would be to make good wickets. And that might, like, we can barely get good wickets for test matches half the year, you know? So like trying to get a flat wicket at Skilled Stadium or whatever the one is in the Gold Coast. Like, I mean,
why do we have to play at Skilled Stadium? Why don't we just play on the main venues? Sydney and maybe the wickets they roll out for the test matches, they're the wickets we do want for the T20 because they're so flat.
Mm. Mm.
Why is it hard just to make good wickets generally anyway? That's a question for a curator. Grounds. Yeah.
It is hard if you're playing lots of cricket in short spaces of time, but this is, I think, a little bit of the problem with having small squares. Traditionally, you can kind of have different wickets on the go at one time, but smaller squares is making that tricky. The Big Bash has so much potential, and it is a wonderful product, but there's no way hiding behind the fact that it has probably been declining as a quality cricket product. People want to watch great cricket. If you believe in the Big Bash as a product, you have to believe that cricket is entertaining. Mm. If you don't believe that, then the Big Bash is doomed, because if you're only relying on innovation, if you're only relying on bells and whistles, you run out of things to innovate on. Mm. And so you're left with nothing that resembles what you started with.
As an administrator, as a board member of Cricket New South Wales, you'd have some insight into this, but it seems like a lot of people are putting forward that the Big Bash would be better simply if better players and better international players came along. In fact, your former opening partner, albeit unstable partnership, David Warner, suggested that today as well. Why aren't there better international players coming then? I mean, it's surely a factor of money. Australia's a rich country, isn't it? That's simplistic, but where's the money?
Well, I think even simple things like a draft for the international players would have massive benefit. And so you can cap the amount that they pay, find a way to find some more money to get the best international players and spread them throughout the league. I think it's not reinventing the wheel here. This is nothing innovative.
Mm. Like it. Ed, later this week, Sydney's going to host 3 1-days and 3 T20s to kick off the men's international summer against India. Now, I know this is about 3 weeks ago, so none of us can remember it, but you would have been in the thick of it as a board member of New South Wales Cricket at SCG Towers, making these games possible after Queensland said isolationism wins elections, pardon me. Yeah. So would I be right in saying New South Wales Cricket has come to the rescue and that perhaps we're seeing a return of New South Wales as the alpha cricketing state under your watch?
Certainly not under my watch, but I think we're very lucky that John Knox, the chairman, has a great relationship with government and the SCG Trust, and those relationships have, in a sense, really saved the start of the summer. So all state boards are always trying to do what's best for cricket. Sometimes that might be not necessarily agreed upon either amongst themselves or with Cricket Australia, but it's a good example of how working with other stakeholders and making sure those relationships are strong can actually be really advantageous.
All right. That's a real media line there. Cool.
It wasn't.
Ted, what about great cricket being streamed around the globe now? Sydney Test cricket streamed around the globe. Is that under your watch?
Look, it's taking its rightful place as the most important form of cricket in the world, really.
Can you explain this news for those who weren't aware?
Well, Sydney Test cricket is now being streamed via, I think, the news.com.au website. You can, you know, tune in, watch your old team, the Bears, take on Higo's old team. Who do you play for again?
Stags.
The Stags. Mm. Yeah, yeah. just tune in, watch the game. Love it.
It's either,
I actually fear that this might take away from your subscriber base because it's either Patreon, $2, watching club cricket live, the real deal.
I mean, it's probably putting you on the spot, but obviously is there a revenue share with grade cricketers there then on the $2? like obviously is it because of the ACA?
26.
If I bet 6 for the Bears and average 12 as I did, what's in it for me?
Yeah.
The subscriber numbers.
You might get a retrospective schooner down at the North Sydney Tavern.
A retrospective schooner.
Yeah, I hope they share it among the alumni of grade cricketers as well. Yeah.
Using a voucher, like it's out of the entertainment book.
That's exactly right. You could turn up, reminisce with Robbie Aitken and the lads.
Ted, I was going to ask you, I was just harping back to that series in 2011-12, and I was just thinking about, I was talking about Pez before, your second test match was the SCG test match when Michael Clarke hit 329 not out. And I was saying to Pez, like, that's so forgotten. Like, and then Pez made the point, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but he did say this, that it almost like Clarke's career is kind of forgotten. Like, Michael Clarke hit 329 not out, the SCG at home against India, and, like, no one ever speaks about it. And also, do you think it was disrespectful that he came within 5 runs of Bradman's record? Discuss.
I certainly remember it because I was the idiot that I think got out on the flattest wicket known to man, kicked one in front of middle and off and see you later, pal, and then put my bum on a seat for 3 days and watched him bat.
Who got you?
Wonderful inning.
Who got you?
Yeah, wonderful inning. Huh?
Who got you? Who got you out?
Zahir Khan. Yeah. I think I was outside the line, no DRS.
Do you?
Just fell over the inswinger a little bit.
Yeah.
Look, DRS, probably, you know, outside the line, missing leg, one of the two. Mm. Who knows? That, never out LBW, was I?
And those are your memories of Michael Clarke's 329. You're outside the line.
Didn't watch a ball, actually. Read the paper for 3 days. Beat up.
What's going on in 2011?
Yeah.
Ed, a question about the captaincy of the Australian Test side. You know, you literally host a podcast talking to the best CEOs around Australia, you know, scaling up.
There we go.
If you could channel those people and yourself, you know, what sort of questions should CA be asking when it comes to establishing the framework for the next skipper of the men's Test side after Tim Payne?
That is such a serious question, but it's an important one. Nonetheless, I think we've seen in the last couple of years how important culture is to teams, whether they're sporting teams, corporate environments, the like. And so I think Australian cricket will need another culture carrier to take over from Tim Payne. I've always said that standing on the field, waving your arms around and changing bowlers, the easy stuff, it's what you do behind the scenes that no one sees that makes great captains. So I'd certainly be looking for someone who's a strong character. And I've said for a while, I think that person is Pat Cummins whenever the time is right.
And then, you know, the cliched follow-up, but what do you say to those who believe that bowlers shouldn't be captains, even for practical reasons such as availability and injury management and having your mind on the game when you're out there?
I think the people that say that are batsmen generally. I don't understand. I've never understood why a bowler can't be a captain. I don't get it. Just pick the best captain, and if they're injured, unfortunately, the next best captain then captains the team. It's not like in rugby. It's like we'll pick the fullback because he never gets injured because he doesn't do any tackling. All he does is kick the ball, and he gets to see the game from behind. He doesn't do anything. We'll make him the captain. No, it's the bloke who's got his head over the ball getting smashed week in, week out. He leads the troops. So I don't get it. Pat Cummins, next captain.
And just finally to top and tail, Ted, with where we started on this Pekowski thing or whatever, you know, if there was a spectrum where, like, you know, Greg Chappell's on one side saying you need to be 18 to play for Australia and if you're over 18, you're too old. And then Darren Lehman's at the other saying you need 18 chop stories and a decade of manliness to join our unit.
Yeah.
Where do you sit on the youth philosophy spectrum?
This is crazy. I'm of the belief that you just pick your best team.
What?
I know.
What?
It's Why? Outrageous, but it's the national team. Let's just pick the best people for every single test match. It's like picking your best captain. And so if Will Pekoski peels off 200 in the Australia A game, well done, mate. You're in the team.
So we need
Joe Burns time. Gets 200. He gets picked. And until that happens, I don't think we can weigh in as to who deserves the spot. I mean, Will's done a wonderful job. Look, I think the other parameter that should come into selection these days, apart from Dave Warner picking the team, is how many times have you been on TGC? I think that should be an important way of weighing up the apples and the oranges. And if it's line ball, it used to be, oh, can he field? Does he catch in slips? It's no. Will's been on TGC three times.
Twice.
He's in the team. Twice.
Joe Burns has yet to start.
Joe Burns hasn't started.
Exactly.
And then the
choice is obvious as to who gets picked, isn't it?
I always like picking guys who have got a bit about them.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of my selection. That's always been my selection criteria.
And so who are you
in terms of looks, that doesn't surprise me, he goes.
Stoinis will be the next Australian captain. Seems obvious. I'm not sure why that's not part of the conversation. Ted, have you thought about coming out of retirement and bullying South Australia for some more Shield runs?
They were literally lining up across the Nullarbor to face that attack. Honestly, imagine going into an Australian test team selection meeting and just saying, names of people that scored hundreds against South Australia in the last 4 weeks. You would have been like, jeez, we've got to pick a team. And 19 people got hundreds against South Australia. How do we delineate between the 250 and the 210?
Yeah. I think that's why Travis Head's runs are so important, because he can't face his own attack.
Well, I mean, that should be counted against him as well, for sure.
Yes.
I think the
poor bloke has to face it. How can he get better, excuse me, when he has to face him in the nets?
Good point.
His runs are worth double.
Yeah.
Just it's on the grade cricket. Last time we, I think last time we caught up, your stated position was I only play grade cricket when the game's within a 3K radius of my house.
That's right.
Which after 7,773 first grade runs and 10,000 first class runs is fair enough. Does that remain your position? And have you played any grade cricket this year? And do you want to? What's the thought process there?
My position has changed a little bit. Okay. The radius has decreased to, if it's not played in my living room, I'm actually not that interested on a Saturday. It's sad, but my time in club cricket has come to an end, Sam.
Is that the announcement?
I'm drifting off into oblivion. But, a couple of Monday mornings, I've walked into work, picked up the umbrella, shadow batted for a little bit, thought about it for 10 and a half seconds, and then thought, not this week, champ. And... I've lost the urge. I feel like how you probably felt for many, many years, but I'm struggling. It's this paradox of wanting to be the good clubman and
So you're still getting texts. You're still getting
people. It's crazy.
You want a game? You're still getting people at Sydney Uni saying, "Come on down for a hit."
Yeah,
Ed Cowan.
Occasionally, I think they're drifting on the idea of a 38-year-old, mildly unfit, noodling left-hander turning up for them as well. I think the game's passed me by.
Got any gloves?
Which is fine, because then, the rite of passage is clearly that you go from, the club cricketer to just being a bloke with opinion on everything, and the game was a lot easier back in, harder.
It was harder
back in my day. I remember when club cricket was hard. It was hard, but not anymore. I see these 16-year-olds running around serving up these long hops and full tosses, and I think,
big bats.
Not in my day. Yeah, big bats, small grounds. Community grounds are getting smaller. Mm. There's no doubt about that.
Exactly.
There's a fight for green space going on in our communities.
On that note, Ed, we're going to leave you to fight that good fight for green space in your communities, and to your entrepreneurial work, your philanthropic work, and your commentary at work on a rival podcast, I think. Thanks for chatting with us to start this summer. That Patreon chat will happen with you at some point. That's news to you, I realize, as I look down the camera at you. You can catch us on YouTube. But until then, Ed, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me back. It's an honor. It really is.
He goes, the major story for the last few weeks has been our dear old friend, Donald Trump. And, as we go to where apparently he softened his rhetoric on the, on his transition from the White House. Mm-hmm. Well, if that's what he wants to do, all good. But The last few weeks have been kind of marked by legal farce. And with that in mind, I'd like to introduce, again, our greatest of friends on the show, Budgie Smuggler.
Yeah.
And what they're providing this summer through the lens of farce, because you can get custom design smugglers, custom design kit through Budgie. You literally put whatever you want on their stuff. We've got Christmas coming up. And I'd like to suggest a few ideas around the prism of farce.
I welcome this premise. Yeah,
not just Rudy Giuliani's hair dye running down his face.
Now, what a month he had. Fucking hell. I mean, going from the Borat thing into Four Seasons gardening into hair dye running down his face. That was all in the space of like 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Hell of a month.
So just trying to think of some cricket-related farces you could put on to your Budgie Smuggler kit.
Okay.
The Windies England in Jamaica. With the pitch there, South Africa needing 22 off one ball, 92 World Cup, just the scoreboard there.
Can I stop you with the West Indies thing? Now, do you remember last year when you were in the room when I was watching this as well? Why were you in my room? We're watching the. Remember last year when the MCG pitch got abandoned? It was Western Australia Victoria game?
Yeah.
And we're watching that. Yeah. And like Stoinis was getting hit in the ribs.
Yeah.
Now, if you've seen the footage, it's on YouTube. I'm pretty sure it's Robe Linda 2 clip. Like, when you watch a wicket do that, what's your reaction?
I wince.
Yeah, it's wincing. Yeah. It's like, because I recognize like if I see a ball. Like
Bill Woodfull.
Yeah, that's true. When you see a ball land a certain full length and it goes above like nipple height, it's going through the chest then. I'm scared. That's scary shit.
And Stoinis folded.
He crippled, yeah.
In like a reflex action, in like the way his body moved after the ball came from full length onto his ribs.
Bad pitches. There's also that pitch in like, it was like Western Australia versus New South Wales. And there's a crack in the middle of the pitch. I think Warner's actually playing the game before he played for Australia. So it's like, when that be mid-2000s, mid-noughts. There's this fucking cavity in the pitch. And it's, that kind of stuff's scary. When the ball's going that quickly and it's 156 grams, that scares you.
So get a picture of those cracks in the wicket as a part of your Budgie Smuggler stuff. You know, you got 2007 World Cup, Sri Lankan at 63 off 18 balls, darkness, etc. LM Dar, Steve Bucknell, that kind of gear. But you know, Pakistan not taking the field in 06 for the
Daryl tampering,
Daryl Hare getting involved as well.
He liked the headline, didn't he?
Yeah. Against particular teams too.
He was then working in a bottle shop and he was taking money out of the till several years after his international cricket career.
Played at my club.
Did he? He played?
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Oh, Harry. Fuck off. I never met him.
Fuck off. Yeah. Did he play first grade?
I don't know. Beyond that.
Yeah. Test race.
Probably. Now, they're doing stuff beyond this as well, though, Budgie. So, like, they've got pairs of VB smugglers. They've got pairs of bloke in a bar smugglers, if that's your gear. They've got accessories. If you want to start at the $10, $20 range, Australian, that is, ahead of summer, great Secret Santa presents. You've got bucket hats, stubby coolers, bum bags, scrunchies. Let's call them gateway products.
Yeah, let's.
Let's call them gateway products.
Yep.
You can get all of that at budgiesmuggler.com.au. Use the code CHAMP at checkout for free shipping. That's budgiesmuggler.com.
Hashtag RCDC, Pezzy Ladder. Now, as we said at the top of the show, many things going on from the summer. Don't forget the Greg Chappell interview. It's a great chat. And he gets into some great areas. I think a lot of people are going to appreciate that chat because he does speak about
Greg. Got a lot he wants to say.
Yeah. I've got to say at the top, real gentleman. Real gentleman. Very nice guy.
I'd have a beer with him or a Ponting wine.
I was surprised. I'm not sure what I was expecting, but he was nice.
Yeah.
Staunch defense of his policies and stuff, as you'd expect.
Yeah.
But he
said, fire all the bullets you want at me. I was like, Jesus, I haven't even said hello
yet. He used some metaphors that I wasn't even ready for. I still haven't really quite processed them in my head. But anyway, that chat's coming out on Thursday. I hope you enjoy it. Patreon.com, of course. And last day for merchandise for that t-shirt, Champ or Be Champs, finishes on Friday. Get your orders in. You can find the link at the Instagram bio.
Just ways to engage with TJC.
You guys know how to use the fucking internet. Come on. What? Holly writes in, hey guys. In an attempt to celebrate my partner's big achievement at work this week, I'm messaging some weird podcast that he seems to be obsessed with to request a shout out, as I know it would probably be worth more than my own congratulations. Along the lines of, and I quote, hey Hugh in Leichhardt, great work getting that guideline published, mate, will suffice. Or something with equal to or more ego stroking. Sorry, Holly. Thanks for potentially considering my request. Who knows, maybe one day he will take me to the cricket and will not sit in the rain for hours for nothing to end up happening. Ollie.
Well, Hugh, great work getting that guideline published, mate. What guideline do you reckon he's published?
He has published the guideline, which is part of Elon Musk's thing moving to Mars, and the first colony is going to be made of glass.
Hmm. I thought he might have published the guideline to helping kids with burns in a hospital.
Why do you say that?
Don't know.
Joe Burns stuff?
Yeah, possibly.
It's a guideline for Joe Burns.
Sounds like just in the second paragraph. So well done, Hugh. There's just something a bit side mouth or alpha about great work getting that guideline published, mate. So well done, Holly. But it sounds like there's a bit of a story there as well around maybe one day he'll take me to the cricket and we'll not sit in the rain for hours for nothing to end up happening. You reckon that's happened? That's happened?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, if it's like out in Sydney, then obviously he's gone to a Sydney test match and it rains.
There's a big argument that's what always happens in cricket, whether it rains or not. You know, if you're not kind of eagle-eyed, you're like, we've got to the cricket, nothing really happened.
If you don't follow the cricket, like, what happened to the cricket today?
Yeah.
Someone got kicked out. That's always the most memorable bit. When someone gets kicked out of the ground, it's like 3:30, 4 o'clock. They've been sitting in the sun all day, even drinking those light beers. They add up over time. They add up over time.
Remember when I just moved to Melbourne, my then girlfriend, now wife, took me to the MCG we went to the MCG for the Boxing Day Test, Australia, India, something like that, maybe 2011, 2012, something like that. And I was trying to explain to her, like, when Laxman was batting, just the, like...
Look at his wrists.
Just absolute whippage, you know? And it's a strong wrist.
Whippage.
Yeah, it's a strong wrist. Yeah, it's not a wrist. It's not a whip wrist. It's a strong wrist.
Yes.
And then, yeah, she left me. But I was like... He was on 26 or something, and
he was on 26 or something.
He battled for, like, I'm going to say an hour and a half, nearly 2 hours, and then he's just out.
Yeah.
He'd worked hard in a test match for 90 minutes to two hours. I mean, in any other elite sport, you're drenched with sweat.
Yeah.
You've achieved, you know, you've got an outcome, win or loss. He just made a fucking eminently forgettable 26. And I looked at Tori, who just did not like cricket, and I was like, no wonder. Straight to the bar, got absolutely shit-faced.
Now, had they introduced the X Factor player?
Yeah, that's a good point.
The first and only match I've ever been to with a partner was the Boxing Day Test match. I want to say 2005, 2006, was also India. Rahul Dravid was opening the batting, and he took 50-something balls to get off the mark. Mm. And I think it was around about the 37th, 38th ball that she was like, this isn't for me, this sport.
She's following how many balls it took him to get off the mark as well.
And jeez, that is my then girlfriend, now ex-wife.
Nice.
That's a lie.
Yeah, just to be clear for the audience.
Just to be clear for the audience.
The DMs do flood.
Hit those
for you.
DMs.
Mate, they do. Oh, I'm not saying you show me. I'm saying show me, see where it's at.
You have access to the account as well. Yeah.
Matt Linton writes
in. What does he say?
Okay. Matt Linton writes in. G'day, Higrat and Pezzy lad. First time writing in as a loyal Patreon. Mm-hmm. However, I did appreciate your advice following my LinkedIn altercation circa October 2019. Since then, I've been referring to myself as a friend of the show. Hope that's cool with you.
Now, Pez, just you recall that story where the guy who bowled him, he'd find that he looked him up on LinkedIn. Right. Do you remember that?
Yes, I do remember actually, yeah. Mm. Alfred. Bit of catfishing stuff.
Yeah.
Anyway, that goes all the way to the top of catfishing. Anyway.
Top of what?
Top of cricket.
Yep.
Anyway, fortunately, I've managed to elude the clutches of grade cricket so far this season, having made myself unavailable as a result of certain Saturday afternoon events. Mm-hmm. One of these being a bucks do for a workmate this weekend. This bucks do includes a number of activities, the first one of the day being 2 hours of indoor cricket. Yes, must be some sort of sick joke. Now, being known in the office as a cricketer, with no one else from the Bucks having played any form of semi-competitive cricket in over 10 years, I've realised that I'm the only one who has something to lose during this Bucks do. I am risking losing any sort of cricketing credibility I have in the office, which is already minimal thanks to public nature of my cricket, during this hit and giggle session that's purely a warm-up for the 12-hour session that will follow. Is it reasonable for me to have crippling anxiety ahead of this Bucks about getting skittled by a 35-year-old Canadian man who's never played cricket? What about if I nick off to a 45-kilometre per hour straight break from the bloke whose hands have never held a cricket ball, let alone turned one? I've never held one.
Look at these hands. They've never held a cricket ball before.
Any thoughts on how I should approach this would be great. Cheers, Matt.
Do you reckon you could tell if a hand had never held a cricket ball, especially in August? See those August hands.
The way they hold it. Yeah. Not sure about the weight of it.
Now, Pez, you would have been to some Bucks parties in your time. Mm. Ever played indoor cricket at a Bucks party?
No.
No. No. No, that's it's set a scene. With all due respect.
And it kind of doesn't make sense, does it? Like, he's saying no one he's played semi-competitive cricket. It's like, well, why are we playing indoor cricket then?
Yeah.
What it says to me is that someone has.
Yeah.
And probably the best man.
You know what I reckon? I reckon Matt has set this up.
Right. He's leaving that out, is he?
I reckon he might have done. Yeah. He's like, oh, what do I do? He already knows what he's going to do.
Yeah.
He's going to fucking obliterate that attack, therefore presenting himself as the alpha.
Yeah. He's maybe. Afraid. Can he do that if he's so afraid of someone who bowls 45k per hour?
He's not afraid, is he? He's not afraid.
Right.
Oh, he has so fears in his life. He has fears in his life, but right. He knows, Matt knows what he's going to do here. Mm. He's going to obliterate that attack. It's all men. He's not going to do the condescending thing where he maybe hit some catches, maybe get himself out. Mm. He's not really worried about taking too seriously, maybe marking center, maybe bringing a front pad, maybe bringing his own stick to the Bucks. I don't know. He's going to obliterate that attack. He's going to be Mark Waugh, Steve Waugh, you know, New South Wales indoor cricket, you know, circa 1991 or whatever that was. No, it'd be the late 80s. When did they play? No, it must have been the 80s. Must have been the 80s, yeah. That's what they're going to do. He's probably going to bring his indoor cricket kit.
Yeah.
He's going to be hitting side nets. He's going to be doubling up. He's going to be working. He's going to be backing up at the bowl's end, taking catches, sledging people. That's a Bucks party. And then he's going to have a 12-hour drinking session.
Okay. I suppose that's very clear advice. I mean, there's no, like, just to acknowledge Matt's conundrum, like, there's no doubt that's the toughest gig in cricket and or life when you are of his position playing against people who haven't played.
I would agree. Yeah. If there were women, children, families involved. This is a group of
just blokes.
This is a group of hypersexualized. I don't know why. They're playing indoor cricket at a Bucks party.
Yeah, but you know,
this has never been kissed territory.
Obviously getting married, so some people won't have been married, so we're in that realm where it's not like, oh, we're a little bit old now, the body's creaking. It's probably some late 20s throbbers, mid 20s.
That should be the fear.
They're about to do 12 hours of drinking, so they can obviously do that.
Now, that's what I was going to say. I think Matt is preparing himself to maybe give himself a bit of social credibility by not going as hard on the drinking, by saying, well, I was the best cricketer today. Don't know if you saw him, he's got 185.
Yeah.
Maybe he's set himself as the massive alpha. He did get alpha'd on LinkedIn, to keep that in mind.
He needs to, it's a tough balance, like he needs to play. Yeah. He needs to dominate, but appear friendly and a functioning member of society.
Yeah, that's right.
Matt needs to understand that he's the target. If they know that he's the cricketer, he's going to be the target that day, and he can only fight fire with fire. So I agree with you, because it's just blokes and hypersexualized blokes at that.
Hypersexualized blokes at a Bucks party at the cricket centre.
Yeah. sexual energy flying around the place.
Like a private school at year 9 maths classroom. I'm just talking about myself. Now.
Yeah, that's right. He has to go hard. He has to fight fire with fire. Yeah, and he has to absolutely dominate. Mm. Okay, how are we going here?
Let's just squeeze in this last one.
All right, we've got to do three.
Yeah,
must do three.
Rule of three. Alex Robert writes in and says, "Hello, men. I'm writing to you today as coming up next weekend is the 5-year anniversary of one of the most memorable events of my cricketing career. It is the anniversary of what I like to call the day of the dodgy sushi." Mm-hmm. It is the commencement of lunch on day one, and we are walking back out into the field when I see our opening bowler in some discomfort, possessing a look which would suggest he is not trustworthy of his current bowel situation.
It's also, I'm just not trustworthy of my current bowel situation, I have to say. What? I'm feeling a bit sick. It's
No one in Gregory had said that. I'm fucking cooked here, mate. I'm big. Oh, fuck.
What do you mean? I'm just not trustworthy for my current bowel situation. But I can speak in long sentences.
It's fucking Shakespearean coming up in the bowling. And is regretting it. Fucking Bill Shakespeare over here. Fuck me. Any danger of pitching one up, Bill? Fuck. possessing a look which was Jesse is not trustworthy of his current bowel situation and is regretting his choice of undercooked Japanese cuisine. However, he is keen to take the first over after lunch and he takes his position at the end of his run-up. And I, as usual, take up my position at second slip.
Okay. As catch a bit there.
Oh, second grip. I see what you're doing there. Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I see what's really being communicated here, Alex.
Send it too.
As he trundles and lands... A quite noticeable fart is heard, and the ball cannons into the knee roll. Plum.
as a bowler looking directly into the umpire's eyes.
Oh, no.
As the bowler looking directly into the umpire's eyes, bending right over in his passionate appeal, it became clear to the batsman and the entire slips cordon that there was more to the fart than first thought,
oh, no.
with a giant poo patch evident on his whites.
Goodness me.
The whole cordon and even the opposition batsmen were in stitches as the bowler waddled off the field with his hands covering the fecal atrocity.
Oh.
At school on Monday, I told my fellow companions about the events and even showed a snapshot photo of the victim's whites, which regrettably spread around the school. My question is this: am I a bully for the events that took place on that fateful Saturday afternoon? Or is the dopamine effect of passing on such a noteworthy story too good to pass up on? Yours truly, Alex.
Well, Alex, I mean, as we've mentioned many times, I know it's a binary world that both is true. You are a bully and the dopamine effect was great.
Yeah.
Now, here's the other thing I want to say on this. So he goes,
go on then.
Ordinarily, I'd say this is a highly embarrassing moment for the guy who shat his pants when appealing for a wicket that he got. But think back, he goes, only a year ago when Australia retained the Ashes at Old Trafford, our own captain had recently shat himself. And no one apart from us seems to mind that much.
No one
gives a shit.
No one mentions it.
So, you know, pain in that, you know, pain truly is Billy Madison, you know, deliberately wetting his pants so when his friend doesn't get embarrassed.
Yeah.
In that situation.
It's cool to pee your pants.
Pain has done the dirty work. You can shit your pants now when you play cricket. The captain did it.
Mm.
No one mind. To be fair. I mean, our mate was taking a wicket at least, so at least he's kind of done something good in this situation. It'd be bad if you did that and got out at the same time.
Yeah.
I heard a guy do a massive fart that may have been a shit when he was sweeping one as a kid, and that was really funny because it was just the act of bending down.
Yeah.
And as he hit it just...
Involuntary.
Yeah.
Involuntary excretion. Yeah.
I've let out farts coming into bowl.
Have you?
And like, because I'm walking in as a leggy, and it's just... burp, burp, burp. What a way to end.
I'm sorry, but if you shit your pants, that's going to go around the school. That's not even dog eat dog. That's just going to happen. You got to
expect that. In 2020.
Well, you know, at least he's taking the wicket. You're right, Pez. If he dropped a catch and shat himself, then, you know, that might be different.
You do remember it as well. I remember a kid when I played rugby with him and he packed into a scrum and had to leave the scrum.
Oh, my God.
Because of that. He wanted to have quite a successful sports career. I don't want to say any more about that.
Great to be back. Great to be back. You can find more of this
gold
on the Patreon. But also, we'll be back on Thursday for Greg Chappell. And then after that, we'll be back on Tuesday for the next week's show. See you guys next week.